Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and in a historic move, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta plans to announce this afternoon that service women will now be allowed on the front lines of battle. Let's talk about it. We'll have a guest in a minute, but I want to open up the phones right away. Men who've been in, women who've been in the military, we would love to hear what this decision means to you. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Service women in particular, is this a milestone? Are you hearing an outpouring of celebration from the women you used to serve with? Are you part of that outpouring of celebration? 212-433-9692. In a week when President Obama invoked Seneca Falls in his second inaugural address, is this another landmark on the road to equality for women? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Of course, one of the reasons that this is so significant is that it's very hard to make it to the Joint Chiefs of Staff or even to be promoted in general if you haven't seen combat. It's the so-called brass ceiling. So how important a motivation is that for you wanting this equality in assignments that you can get in the military? And men who've been in, what do you think? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Apparently this has bipartisan support, so we're not going to be seeing more conservative male members of Congress standing up in large numbers and saying this is wrong, women don't belong in combat, the chivalry impulse is going to stop men from doing what they need to do in combat because they're going to be too concerned with protecting the women they're serving with. But you can address that concern because it certainly comes up on talk radio. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Some of the background here is that in November, four service women in the ACLU filed a lawsuit against the Defense Department. They argued that women are already serving in combat roles, but without recognition since they're not officially sanctioned to do so. So this decision may or may not be officially in response to that lawsuit, but maybe kind of stepping around it. Let's bring in Anna Mulrein, who's been covering this decision as a staff writer for the Christian Science Monitor. Anna, thanks so much for coming on.
Yes, glad to be here.
And you're at the Pentagon, I gather, is that right?
I am, yeah. There's a briefing in progress right now, actually, that I just stepped out of to discuss on background this decision to just essentially eliminate all gender-based barriers to service.
What did you learn at that briefing that maybe you didn't know an hour ago?
Yeah, I think what we're all particularly interested in is, you know, how soon this can happen. And essentially what we're finding out is that all of the service chiefs, so, you know, as in the head of the Marines, the Army, the Navy, have to submit a plan by mid-May of this year saying exactly how they're going to do this, how they're going to implement it. And essentially, it's kind of a paradigm shift, really. I mean, right now, all of the services have to say why they want exceptions for women. About a year ago, they lifted, you know, essentially positions in combat brigades, so infantry guys, artillery, those sorts of really fighting on the front lines groups, you know, and saying, well, you know what, we need women to serve in these units as medics, as you know, different positions. And so that they were able to do that, the Secretary of Defense, you know, lifted what they call a co-location rule, saying, okay, women can come into these previously, you know, these combat areas that were previously off limits to them. You know, now essentially they're saying women should be, you know, you have to give us a plan by May to say how you're going to put women in, you know, into every part of your organization, all these combat roles. But, you know, they can also ask for exceptions. They can say, well, listen, we don't think women should be in, you know, a Navy SEAL. We don't think they should be in the Delta Force, and here's why. But they're going to have to explain it, and then the Pentagon leadership is going to make a decision on that.
Is the Navy already saying that about Navy SEALs?
They have not. No. You know, they're saying they're studying this stuff. They have to submit, essentially they submit their plans, and then in mid-May, they have until January of 2016 to submit what they call exclusion. So why you know, these positions should be closed to women. Any unit and any position that they determine is going to be, that they want to be closed to women, is going to need to be personally approved by the Secretary of Defense. So essentially this summer, the Marine Corps, the Army, they're going to begin, you know, a series of physical tests. In the case of the Marines, they're going to take 400 men and 400 women and put them through physical training tests and essentially see what they can do. The Marine Corps officer who was briefing us in this backgrounder that I just came out of was saying, you know, one of those examples would be loading a tank round. You know, he said one of the physically demanding requirements is the loader has to be able to take the round out of the tank, you know, turret in a very confined space and spin around 180 degrees and move it to another area. And, you know, that requires a lot of upper body strength. You can't use your legs because it's so, you know, the space is so limited. And so, you know, will they be able to do that? That's the sort of thing they're testing now, because, you know, essentially their bottom line, what they're really adamant about is saying, we're not going to lower the standards. That seems to be the concern across the board, you know, among people who say, you know what, we should open these positions. And you know what, we have these positions are things that women have been doing in war, you know, for the past decade. Now we're just formalizing that, but you know, we don't want to lower physical standards either, and that's the big concern among a lot of folks that you talk to here.
Let's take a phone call. Pat in Larchmont, you're on WNYC. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Good, and you?
Fine. I was a naval officer in the 70s, was in the military from 73 to 80, and in one of my assignments, I was working for the Commander-in-Chief of the Atlantic Fleet, and in 76, I did a report with a group of other officers and enlisted women looking at all of the non-traditional roles in the Navy that could have been filled by women. This was obviously post-Vietnam, and it's kind of bittersweet for me to see this happening. I'm delighted. I think it's going to be good for the military. At the same time, it's a little sad to think of all of the generations of women who really wanted to continue to serve and just had like I did, to leave, recognizing that there was just no other option. But interestingly, I was part of a team that did a three-month study on the physical conditioning and did it with the Navy SEALs and actually learned a great deal. Never was more buff in my life. I look at the photos with regret. But at the same time, we really found that some of the things we ended up doing that I think will happen is we found that a lot of things women couldn't do, men were actually being injured in quite frequently. And by really reassessing what was happening, we not only made it possible for women to do it, but we reduced injuries in certain jobs. Again, this is the Navy, so it was lots of loading of things into planes and working on tugs and doing various things with carriers and with squadrons. But I think it's going to make a big, big difference in the way the military functions. They're going to learn to accommodate women. Hopefully, we'll start to deal with the sexual abuse issues. Mm-hmm. Some of that, I think, will really get turned around when the focus is on equality for women. But again,
Pat, there is such a sexual abuse problem in the military. There's been a lot of focus on it lately. In fact, one of the five documentaries nominated for Best Documentary at the Oscars is The Invisible War, which covers this very topic. So, Pat,
yes,
do you think that there would be a relationship between the barriers breaking down to serve on the front lines and the incidents of sexual assault?
I think in the fact that, you know, there's still a lot of objectification of women by men across the service line. It was less in the Navy. But I think that one of the things that has to happen, and we did it in areas like with poor retention, is that the COs have to be held accountable. If they don't report and deal with it, not that just that it happens, but that they don't deal with it aggressively, their ability to be promoted should be affected. And, you know, that was one of the most successful things we did when we were trying to change an atmosphere after Vietnam to be you know, more equal with people in the Navy, so that they decided to stay in when they were highly trained people and were really, you know, voting with their feet and leaving. And I think that it's going to get better when women are seen as, you know, people who are able to do combat roles. At the same time, I think that the military is going to really have to look at that. And it's great that the man who's being looked at as Secretary of Defense has a history of being very aggressive about that. I think that he's going to be terrific.
Thank you very much, Pat. We really appreciate it.
Pat, I'd love to interview you. I'd love to talk with you. So I don't know if you can leave your contact information.
So Pat, we'll take your I'll put you on hold, and we'll take your contact information off the air, and we'll give it to my guest, Anna Mulrine, who's covering the Women on the Front Lines decision for the Christian Science Monitor. And Anna, what did you want to say?
Well, I said Pat raises a really interesting point, as you do as well. I mean, I think that's something a lot of women that I've spoken with are really thinking about, how this could affect, you know, the issue of sexual assault in the military as well. And you know, and I was talking to one former Marine company commander, and she was saying that there's no doubt in her mind that there's a link there, and that she had experienced it firsthand as a woman officer in the Marines, this kind of constant reminder by your peers that you're not as strong, you're not as competent, that, you know, that sort of evaluation of you is based on your, not your actual, but essentially your perceived performance, and because you're automatically excluded from even trying for these positions. So so she was saying, you know, I don't want standards to be lowered at all, but and I'd love a chance to try, and that if maybe we're seen as equals, as somebody who has your back on the battlefield, that this is, you know, the sexual assault would diminish within the force. That was the hope.
Let's take another call. Caroline in Newburgh, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I actually wanted to touch upon the sexual assault topic as well. My husband is currently in the active duty Army. He is a former infantryman, and he now works with the quartermasters. Anyways, we were discussing this last night, and he said that he thinks that there will be less sexual assault once women are allowed in the combat role, because they will be viewed as comrades and teammates. You know, they're going to protect their buddy rather than, I guess, subjugate them when they get back to the FOB. But the other odd thing that I kind of wanted to bring up, and I'm honestly quite ashamed of, is me as an Army spouse, I don't, I'm not excited about this women in combat roles, and I feel like I'm betraying my fellow women by saying this, but there's something about it that, I don't know, it just, I just am not, I guess, not comfortable with.
Is it that you think there'd be more risk of your husband having an affair, or is it something else?
Oh, no. Actually, I think, no, it's nothing like that. I think it's maybe because back when he was an infantryman and we were first together, when I would go to the functions and formals and things like that, it was such a boys' club that it almost seems like it just be hard for women to be a part of that. I mean, it was just this insane kind of partying and drinking, and it was just so ridden with testosterone that maybe I'm actually more concerned for the women, but I guess I'm having a hard time seeing them in that role with these wild boys, you know, so to speak.
Well, they used to say that about college. But
it's scary.
But Caroline, thank you very much. Yes. Anna, do you hear that much?
Yeah, I do. And Caroline, I mean, this idea about the boys' club—it's certainly what Caroline is expressing is what I'm hearing too from some, you know, particularly Marine commanders who are wondering about how these 18, 19-year-old, you know, guys who come into the Marine Corps who want to be infantry guys, you know, he described it as a football team of death. You know, you're on this football team. It's like the football team of death. You're in these, you know, you're kind of all in it together, and you know, and with all the kind of crude jokes in this high testosterone environment. And, you know, and he was saying that's really going to be a leadership issue. You know, I mean, that these, you know, commanders are going to have to get their units together and say, listen, we all need to take a breath, and it's really going to be a leadership challenge. You know, the other thing they're wondering about is this going to affect recruiting? You know, are these guys, you know, who you know, want to go and prove themselves? And in, I think in our society, what's considered the manliest, you know, form of, mm-hmm. of you know, behavior you can do is sign up for battle on behalf of your country. You know, is it still going to be as appealing to them if they feel like, you know, their boys' club is now open to women?
So let me take one call to push back because there are plenty on the board. Jeffrey in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jeffrey. Oh, gosh. We've got such a terrible line. I don't think we can do it. Let me try Daniel in Manhattan. You're on the air. Hi, Daniel. Daniel? Eek. Okay, so what Jeffrey told the screener, Anna, is women have biological needs. Women are more emotional. Combat is not for women. How much do you think we're going to still hear that from conservative members of Congress or anybody else?
Well, I think you'll hear it. It might be couched in other terms. I mean, again, these are. I think whenever you have these issues of integration, you know, you hear it from, you know, how the camaraderie issue. I think heard that when African Americans were being, you know, integrated into the force, when women early on were being integrated into the force. You know, and even in the wake of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, these sorts of, you know, is this going to affect things, the attraction on the battlefield? And I mean, I think it's something the country will continue to grapple with. What struck me, I was talking to someone about this issue of how, you know, misplaced chivalry, for example. Mm-hmm. What are guys going to do when they see women fighting beside them on the front lines? And they, you know, will they want to protect them because, you know, you're a woman, and so they take their head out of the game of fighting because they want to make sure that this woman in their unit doesn't get hurt. Sort of this idea of misplaced chivalry. You know, but as folks point out, this happens all the time. You know, with men, with their comrade in arms, it's the sort of behavior that earns them a Medal of Honor because they want to protect their buddies so much that they throw their body on a grenade. You know, and when men.
So
do
you think they're going to have? Are they going to have to train against misplaced chivalry?
I mean, to some extent, maybe some will, but the guys I talk to who even say they're not so sure about women in combat, but they say, you know what, that's the thing I worry about the least because we do it for our, you know, buddies on the battlefield all the time. It's the highest form of honor to do that, and, you know, it's just what you do for a fellow Marine, for a fellow soldier.
Let's take one more call. Cleo in Morristown. You're on WNYC. Hi, Cleo.
Hi, Brian. I just wanted to say they have to definitely give it a chance. We had the African-American fighters, the Red Tail Squadron, until they could actually get up, and they used to paint their planes with a red bright thing, and the Germans must have seen them, but I don't think they even lost one plane. We also have our women, the Second World War with the WASPs, they're now called. They were the greatest airplane fighters, so I think they have to. And you know what? In the other respect, there may be a law. If they commit something so dastardly sexually, then maybe we should put them in jail and keep them there. That's my comment.
Cleo, thank you very much. So before you go, Anna, does this come from legal pressure or from an impulse toward equality like Cleo was just talking about? Because I know that in November, Forest Service women and the ACLU filed a lawsuit against the Defense Department, arguing that women are already serving in combat roles, but without recognition, since they're not officially sanctioned to do so. Is this decision a response to that lawsuit?
That's a great question. I mean, the military says, no, it's not. You know, it's something we've been studying for, you know, for a solid year now, but beyond that, you know, just this idea of gender equality as women are serving on the battlefield for the last 10 years, it's stuff they're doing. So we're just kind of, you know, making official what's already happening. But yeah, at a certain level, I mean, I think certainly the Department of Defense would rather implement this in their own way than do it through a lawsuit, because, you know, if these findings are overturned, these lawsuits are still making their way through federal courts, then, mm-hmm. you know, then they're going to, I think federal judges would tend to be pretty deferential towards the military and how they implement it, but I mean, they could find that there are going to be some prescriptions for exactly how they do it. This way, rolling it out, you know, they get to decide rather than the courts.
By the way, on NPR yesterday, I heard them repeatedly say that women would now be eligible to be infantrymen. And I thought, Are they going to change the title to infantry person?
My favorite is the Air Force. They call their equivalent of soldiers, they call airmen, and then they call the women female airmen, which I always thought was very funny.
All right, yeah, Anna Mulrine, covering this decision. Secretary of Defense Panetta will officially make this announcement, we are told, at 1:30 this afternoon, allowing women to be on the front lines in combat. Anna Mulrine, staff writer for the Christian Science Monitor. Thank you so much for taking the time out of the briefing.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, determined NPR tweeter. He calls himself an information DJ. Andy Carvin with a new book about social media and the Arab Spring. Stay with us.